Welcome to the LTW Fancast with me, Jess Bunyard.
And me, Jacob Basford.
Hello, and welcome to what is a down week for some women's rugby, but we're still here. We're going to be chatting about the news, Six Nations, some stuff. But before we crack on with that and our exciting interview with Paul Morgan from PWR, actually, I'm like chuffed to bits in our first season as a pod. We're getting somebody from the league on, but we'll dig into that later. Jacob, morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jess. Good afternoon. Good evening, listeners. When this reaches you on the air, on the podcast airwaves, yeah, I'm very good, thank you. So the second week of the Easter break, I've been very busy with just doing a lot of general uni stuff. I've been feeling quite productive and in control of things, which means that next week when term starts, it's all going to come crashing down. But yeah, it was a good weekend of rugby. I managed to watch both the Scotland France game and the England Wales game in the Women's Six Nations, and obviously there was the Tigers men's fixture on Friday. 17 minutes of my life that I'm never getting back. But if the listeners aren't aware, Jess guest hosted in for Elliot on the Rolling Mall this week, joining Charles Richardson of the Telegraph. And yeah, I thought you were great on it, Jess. Some really good points about the scrum. I know we talked a little bit about it off record. I think you made like a great point about Tigers not having that sort of that 3G thing just to practice scrums on. Obviously we know from interviews with Tom Hudson that Brooksby College do have a plastic pitch. There might be that option for the men to explore. I mean, I've never actually played on 3G, so I don't know actually how to play. I've never had the experience of playing contact rugby on there. But yeah, I can imagine scrumming on that kind of surface is not ideal sometimes, especially when Newcastle are putting lots of pressure on us, legal or otherwise.
Yeah, and look, people can go listen to the Rolling Mall, but a little bit on it is there's different types of surfaces, so not all 3Gs are the same. Depending on when people had it installed, there's a vast difference. I've played on an older Astro 3G and did find it difficult to drive and use my weight and my balance in the same way. Obviously, I'm not international or premiership level propping, but I think it's probably something we need to practice on if we're not already doing it. Is after this game, can we intentionally weaken our scrum and then practice that a little bit weaker? I think that might be something going forward. But look, a happy evening, Monday evening for me, chatting about scrums is always good. It's always good.
Yes, good. Yeah, I think just quickly want to just put on it that I think something that's concerning me, I don't know, because this is just as a former second row. Obviously, I know that the second rows are a huge part of that scrum push, and it's like you said, we're on a different surface. Sorry, I'm not convinced by Hatherall's scrummaging ability yet. I really rate Hatherall. I think he's an amazing ball carrier. I just think every time he's been at number five, that's when also it's when we're down to the bare bones in the front row. But because we're not getting that, we're not, I don't think we're getting enough power from the second row.
Yeah, and look, I guess it's something they're aware of and working on. And I really rate Hatherall. I like his ability around the park. I like him and Harry Wells playing together, causing some chaos. So giving a bit of oomph and locking them together is, I'm sure, something the forwards team, forwards coaches, and the packs are hopefully aware of. But moving on, we're going to give you kind of a brief introduction, whet your appetite for the pod is to come. So we're going to do the Six Nations roundup. We're going to hit you with some stats that I found. We're going to chat quickly about attendances, There's a bit of news to go through. We're going to briefly discuss Fantasy League and how I'm still struggling to climb the table. We're going to do a little bit of catch up on that USA South Africa game that was also at the weekend. And then we're going to chat into Allianz Cup. We're going to remind ourselves what it is. We're going to start to build up to that home fixture. And drum roll, we've got our big interview with PWR's Paul Morgan, which I'm excited about. So without further ado, let's get cracking. So a massive, massive thank you, and kind of hip hip hooraying to Leicester Forest Rugby Club, who have decided to sponsor us for this season. And I'm really, really excited because they're such a strong grassroots club, and we know they've got strong links to Tigers. And for me, I'm really, really pleased to be linking with a grassroots club that's so passionate about women and girls rugby and working so hard in the Leicestershire region to help grow the game. And just like the Leicester Tigers women's team, I feel it's important for us to build strong connections with the surrounding community. So we know, and I know when I spoke to Vicky for a previous publication, she didn't just want to like pick up and drop a women's team in the middle of Leicestershire without any connection to the outside world. She wanted to help grow women and girls rugby in the surrounding region and then forge stronger pathway links and grow the game and help more people pick up a rugby ball and experience the benefits of it and use the Leicester Tigers women's team, a successful Leicester Tigers women's team, to do that. So for us, it feels like we're helping that model by forging these really, really strong links with Leicester Forest Rugby Club. So we're going to bring you some more info, some insights into the rugby club, the strong links they've got with Tigers. But for now, thank you, thank you, thank you so much, Leicester Forest Rugby Club, for sponsoring us. And I'm really, really excited that we're building such strong connections with such a strong community rugby club. On to our Six Nations roundup. So we're rounding up round two. And I've got to begin with the Ellis Martin try. How good on her first Six Nations start that she scores a try. She's clearly like, obviously, it's sad that the way she's got the starting jersey is through another player's injury, but she's starting to put a real stamp on that. Jacob, are we? I mean, I'm overhyping, maybe, because we're Ellis Martin fans. She's a friend of the pod, but how good is it to have her going away and scoring tries in an international jersey?
I think it's massive. Obviously she's played for Scotland before, but this is like her first time playing. So obviously last week against Wales coming off the bench was her first ever Six Nations appearance. And then yeah, obviously Lana Skeldon got a very nasty injury in that Wales game. So she was given the starting hooker shirt for this week. And yeah, I just unbelievably, unbelievably proud. Proud because it's a Leicester Tiger representing their country. Proud because she scored her try in the most Tigers way possible, which was obviously scoring off a rolling maul. And yeah, obviously then she was substituted by Molly White, right? I believe her name was, and then she got the replacement got a really nasty looked like she'd like concussed herself tackling the huge French locker foul. And luckily she was seen walking about towards the end of the match, but they had to like get the stretcher on. But luckily Molly was walking around towards the end of the match, so hopefully she's not too bad. But yeah, obviously then Ellis Martin had to come back on and see out the rest of that game. I think which will lead me into Scotland. I thought Scotland played really well. It was a very Scottish performance, and I mean that with the greatest of respect. They were doing so much good things, especially in that first half. But it was just these small moments of inconsistency that really cost them. I think they missed about 5 points at goal, which on another day they would have took, because they weren't tough kicks by any means. And I think in the second half, because the wind was against them, and France did so well all game just to apply so much pressure onto Scotland, and Scotland did really well to deal with it. But with the wind against them, it just meant they had no way of getting into France's half to score any points to get back into the game. And you know, I think their only opportunity really was a kick to touch that was missed. So I think, you know, that there will be some frustrations there from just a purely Scottish perspective, that really they had, you know, obviously, I think France in the end did deserve to win the game. I think France's handling kept Scotland in the game at points, but you know, I think we should be really, really impressed with the work that Scotland are doing. Matt Banahan, former England win, he's coaching their attack. I believe that's starting to really click. Obviously, we're talking about Ellis Martin, but there were, you know, I think we have to talk about Lea Barlett as well, starting Loosehead, another really impressive shift from our Lea.
Yeah, absolutely. I do want to swift like not swiftly move on, but just talk briefly about England. Meg Jones getting her start in the Six Nations, starting at centre. I know we're going to go to fantasy rugby shortly, but I had her in my team, which proved out to be a really good option. Thanks, Meg. I thought she played really well. I thought they looked a little bit shaky again in the first quarter, but then they kind of settled into things, and it's clear they're still settling into like new attacking ways of playing and a new head coach. Albeit everyone working underneath John Mitchell was with them for WXV. I think it's also credit to Wales that it wasn't quite. I know it was a huge scoreline, but it wasn't still the massive scoreline it has been in previous visits
No.
where it's been 50 plus nil. But yeah, like how so good. I know this was the other game that you watched. Like, so Meg Jones was so good every time she got the ball. And I was like itching for her to get the ball even more because every time she touched it, they seemed to just go past the gain line and then some.
Yeah, I think she was actually quite unlucky not to really get any points out of the game, because she was just, I mean, she was fantastic. Just her ability, just to step, use her pace, power, just that, it was just that seven skill set, and being able to use that seven skill set in the 15 player code and still do it well, and still do it by playing the 15 player code really well. Because you've got to remember that, you know, they're two different type of games. Such an impressive skill. And, you know, we're running out of sort of skills, characteristics, hyperbole to describe Meg Jones this season. But I mean, you know, it's just fantastic. And, you know, obviously, you know, she was getting that recognition across the PWR league, that there was hardly a team of the week that she wasn't in. But yeah, to see her rip it up in England versus Wales in the Six Nations was awesome. I was quite impressed with England. I really like the way they're trying to go about things. I thought the ball handling, particularly between the forwards, really, really impressed me at points. You know, Hannah Bottomman was class.
Well, actually, I like on Hannah Bottomman. So we're gonna shout out to Hugh Griffin Rugby, who's also called Rugby Stat and Cat. He's got some kind of stats from round two pinned on his Twitter or X, and he highlights Hannah Bottomman. She was one of the top carriers of the weekend. She made nine carries in that game. Although there are some other fantastic stats. So Callender in that same game made 21 carries. And then top tacklers, there's Sadia Cabea, who's unsurprisingly top of the chart for England's top tacklers. But then Callender, again, shout out to the work rate that Callender had in that England-Wales game. She was in the top tacklers. So Callender, top carrier and top tackler for Wales. But as you say, Bottomman making the top carries for England with nine is a great stat for a prop.
And I think I did say this last week. I thought that England would look to dominate Wales in the pack, because everyone likes to talk about Wales's pack. And I think that happened. It didn't just happen in the handling. I think we were all over them in the scrum as well. So we're obviously very exciting. We're starting to talk about Lions selection, and and obviously Salicia Tupulotu is really highly rated. And she came off the bench, which obviously I meant had to change my fantasy league. But I she did struggle a tad in the scrum,
You did, yeah.
which, when we're thinking about line selection, when we're thinking about these play, because everyone made it such a big hoo-ha that it was just going to be like England plus a little bit of Wales for Lions, which, as we said in that pod, was a bit of a gross misrepresentation by the.
Well, it is, and I again go to the stats, and I apologize probably because I'm not going to get Irish names right exactly. But Monaghan, probably, possibly not saying that name wrong, right? I do apologize. She was topping the stats all over the place. I think Hugh did a separate post that I'll try and find, but she did 30 carries in her game for Ireland, Italy. Like that's absolutely immense. And I've got it here. She played for 80 minutes because I found the post now. She carried 30 times. She gained 150 total meters. Sure, she ran for 150 total meters. She gained 40 meters for a team. She gained 36 meters post a tackle point. She carried for sort of 27 meters in contact. She made 15 tackles. She did 15 ruck arrivals, 8 passes, 7 line out takes. She beat 4 defenders. She did 3 clean outs and 1 offload. And that's a second rower.
Shift.
That's an immense workload. So there immediately stats is telling us a story that maybe our England bias from people picking saying line selections is just going to be all England needs to possibly like calm down a little bit because these players are having amazing stats at international rugby.
Couldn't agree more, but yeah, I think it was good to see from Wales that it was competitive. They had that never say die attitude. I think the score was fairly reflective of the results. I think what will frustrate Wales is that again it was that kind of that difference in being clinical. Aside from some like back moves and crossfield kicks that went wrong, England were largely very clinical, whereas Wales weren't, and I think that will frustrate Wales because they had the opportunity to make England sweat a lot more than what they did in the end. But I think England are going in the right direction, and yeah, we started with Meg Jones. I think we should finish with her. Obviously, there was a bit of chat about the fact that she's Cardiff born, and did she pick England because of the professional setups at the time? I'm always a bit wary of reading too much into that because, players are free to play for whoever they want, and
Yeah,
that's
look, there's a lot of chat, isn't there, in men's and women's rugby about, oh, they're not from this country of birth, therefore, diddle diddle da. And I tend to avoid those sorts of conversations because I find them a little bit unpalatable. Because there's, underlying hints of, well, you're not from this country, so get out. Sometimes I think veiled in some of those. I think the quality of Meg means she can play in any international setup she wants into. And so I think it's very fortunate that she plays for England and for Tigers because she was certainly like lighting up the pitch for England. And we know she lights up the pitch for Tigers. So yeah, any kind of conversations of people going, well, she's not from this country or they're not from this country, which you find a lot when it's men's international rugby, I find there's a bit of conversation about that on Twitter. I find that slightly unpalatable, to be honest. But yeah,
I mean,
I'm happy to play for England.
well, same. I mean, don't get me wrong. Yes, there probably has been a lot of Welsh qualified players that have picked England in the past purely because of opportunities, and the setup and the ceiling was a lot higher. So I don't think that hasn't factored women's players decisions in the past. And I would also argue that's not purely confined to the women's game either. But as you said, like, people are just free to play for whoever they want. And yeah, like, Meg Jones is playing for England. She's tearing up for England and will continue to tear it up for England. And you know, if she keeps this up, she'll probably, you know, I don't want to get too ingrained in Lions conversations, but you know, at the moment she's definitely putting her hand up. So yeah, I think we're just going to quickly round off with the fact that this game was at Ashton Gate Stadium in Bristol. It was the highest attendance of a women's national rugby fixture outside Twickenham. About 19,000 beat
Yeah.
the
But
record.
interestingly, like that wasn't the only record set at the weekend. So I dug up a thread, like a Twitter thread from Her Sport that appeared on my feed this morning. Literally as I was like waking myself up. So yes, there was a record crowd. It was the record crowd that was been set outside Twickenham, of 19,705 for a Red Roses game outside of Twickenham, which is pretty impressive. But also, there was a new attendance at the there was attendance record at the Ireland Italy game. So it was a new
Yes.
attendance record of 6,605 for a standalone Women's Six Nations fixture on Irish soil. So I think that's also impressive. So I think well done for everybody really in organising all the behind the scenes stuff and amping up the crowds and getting the attendance there both in England and in Ireland, because that's really exciting that we're not just setting attendance records in England, we're setting it across the home nations, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah. And I think it's just great. Like, obviously it's ahead of the World Cup, which we're hosting, but I think this is something that we should be doing anyway, is playing the, you know, we're blessed as a country, you know, in all the home nations. We're blessed with a plethora of stadia. And I think it's great to, you know, you've got to remember that these England teams are playing for England. They're not playing for London.
Yeah.
And you know, I think it's great that we're putting on games across the stadium. I mean, it makes perfect sense to have an England Wales fixture in Bristol.
It
Like,
does. Like, and this is something that England women have done in the past. They haven't always played at Twickenham. They've gone on tour to help grow a fan base. It's something I wish England men did. Can you imagine an England men's game for the Six Nations at Old Trafford? I think that sounds pretty exciting. Because I remember a pre-COVID Six Nations fixture when Mids was in charge of England, and this was at Doncaster, and it was England versus Italy. Where interestingly, England played amazingly well for the first half, but then they didn't almost push on and find another gear in the second half. But they still won the game, but they didn't probably win it as convincingly as they wanted. But they were going around the country, at places like Doncaster, growing the game, growing a crowd, growing a fan base. And it's great to see them continue to do that at larger stadiums. And I think that's really important. Yes, you have to play a game at Twickenham, you have to play your game, some games at Twickenham, absolutely. But this is a countrywide sport, and I wish we saw more. It doesn't have to be Six Nations stuff from the men or from the women, but more, summer internationals or autumn internationals or whatever they happen to be. I wish we saw more of them spread across the country. So I hope this continues post World Cup is my
Yes.
hope, that it isn't a tradition that stops after the World Cup because we're getting good crowds at Twickenham. I think it needs to continue.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, obviously, you know, the RFU own Twickenham, you know, they get all the money from those gate receipts. It does make sense to have the majority of your games at Twickenham. It's not just a London headquarters thing. It is actually, you know, this is a revenue generating thing for the game across England at all levels for the community game as well. But obviously both me and Jess are residents of Yorkshire. I mean, it'd be, I know at the World Cup they're playing in York, but you know, post 2025, like, how cool would it to have a game at either Headingley or the Leeds United ground? That'd be insane. So you know, things to think about. But I absolutely agree that, like, this has to be something that they think about post the World Cup. And I think as well, like, As you're saying, do it for the men a little bit as well, especially in the autumn internationals. Like I know they've flirted with it in the past, but having the men's and the women's team sort of travel around a bit, I think would be massive and would have.
I remember I went to Newcastle to St James's Park for the pre-Japan Men's World Cup. They did a series of warm-up games.
Yes,
I
yes.
think this was against Italy, but
Yes, yeah, it was.
and me and my dad went, and I think we travelled up on the train, which meant we could have a couple of pints because dad wasn't driving. It was a great day. The stadium was packed, and people. In the north of the country, got to see the top tier of like English rugby and got to like send them off before the World Cup. And it's amazing. Like it's such a feel good factor for probably for both players and for fans ahead of a big tournament that I do wish we saw more of it. But I do want to, it's slightly linked to attendance, but I know you and I often speak about Tigers women attendances. What can we do as fans to boost that? What can we do as a pod to boost that? What can the club do that? What's the long-term goals of boosting attendances? This morning, I often listen to different podcasts as I like start my day. So I'm in the shower and I'm getting my brekkie, I'm loading the dishwasher, doing whatever, feeding the cat, da da da. Won't bore you with my morning routines. But I often have a podcast on to just help like soundtrack my day and I'll listen to it. Sometimes I listen to the news agents, which I know you and I have spoken about, because I'm a big fan of theirs. There's a spin-off called The Sports Agents. It's Gabby Logan is a co-host and she talks about a range of sporting stuff. And there was one, it's not their most recent pod. I think it's their second most recent because I'm behind. But they've been talking about the Women's Super League, which is football, so the WSL attendance and why there's this massive growth in crowds in women's football, particularly why Arsenal are getting massive crowds. Previously in their history, they've been getting in the small thousands, like 1,000s in. Why has it now grown to these massive crowds? And they've discussed like the challenges and the goals for the future and collaboration and the challenges they're experiencing. I'm halfway through the pod, but if I think it's worth a listen for us as Tigers fans and Tigers supporters and anyone involved in women's rugby, we don't necessarily want to follow the template of other sports. Women's football is quite a way ahead of other women's sports in this country that sometimes it provides a bit of a false narrative in the growth of women's sports in this country because they're so far ahead, they skew the figures slightly. But I think it's a potential template and guidance that football offers that might help rugby find its path, certainly on co-collaboration. WSL, there was a question raised about do we need to just like bookmark one day in the week, like a Friday night fixture, to have all of your fixtures played then, like a standalone day, almost like the Women's Six Nations has the standalone window. But I think for us as Les Tigers supporters, I actually found it really positive. Their Arsenal haven't won a lot this season or haven't won anything this season. They had a pretty poor season last season where they only won like one trophy. But they're still getting sellout crowds, but they've grown those crowds from like 1,000 up to these sellouts. And I think that's a massive boost for you, I, and anyone who's in these early stages of supporting this women's team that actually the growth will happen. We
Yes,
see the growth in other sports. But it's just such an interesting listen because it's talking about, I think, very similar challenges around the commercialization, the marketing. When do you collaborate in partnership with your men's team? When do you also then create something that's your separate entity? When do you stand on your own two feet? When do you come together as one club? When do you do that? Marketing, training sessions, training fixtures, events. So I think I'm just shouting that out now because we're talking about attendances, but it's really given me a lot to kind of think about in, and I think a lot of hope and positivity about where we are as a team, where we are as a club, and where the potential growth might be. So shout out, like, thank you, sports agents, because you kind of fired my brain up this morning.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think just quickly, I mean, circling back to Meg Jones, like in terms of like outreach and commercialization, for what you might consider sort of like the core rugby supporter who potentially might be on Twitter, but not other kind of social media platforms. Having someone like Meg Jones tear it up in an England shirt for on BBC Two I think it is also like a massive boost, not obviously just for the women's game as well, but you know, some Tigers fans, I know we've heard over the season that like some fans have said like they didn't really know about games until the actual day. I mean, we'll take some of those claims with a pinch of salt, but having, you know, having a Tiger superstar tear it for England
Yes.
on national free-to-air television on BBC Two might not do anything massively for Tigers this season, but I think will have an impact sort of in the more long term. I mean, I was just using Meg Jones as an example there, but like Ellis Martin as well. I mean, Fran McGee when she comes back from injury, all the Tigers players. I'll shout out Lisa Cockburn as well, came off the bench for Scotland at replacement Loosehead. You know, all these Tigers players are getting a platform on the BBC on free to air, and I think in the long term, I think that will pay off for Tigers as well. So yeah, there's I do agree with you, Jess. It's very sometimes at points of season you think like, what more can we do doing to get bums on seats? But I definitely think in the long run we'll get there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm shuffling papers. I'm getting ready for the news section. It's a very short news section this week. To give you the news that Vicky Cornborough has retired from international rugby. She won 75 caps for the Red Roses and reached two World Cup finals. She's been on maternity leave from the England setup, and there's been an article on BBC saying that she does not feel mentally ready to return to rugby after giving birth to twins last summer. She said, and I'm going to quote here from the BBC Sport article, "I'm probably the strongest I've ever been, but I'm just not there yet mentally because having twins is really hard. Living off a couple of hours sleep a night is not conducive to a high performance pressure environment. Stepping away from the Red Roses and announcing my retirement is the right thing to do." She said it's a big weight off her shoulders. It's a life-changing decision. And she's got a dual career as well because she's maintained a career in the tech industry for the same company for 10 years alongside having an England contract. So that's amazing.
Wow, yeah.
That's a lot of plates to spin and juggle there. And she said here she's also keen to celebrate the different paths that she and Abby Ward have taken on their journeys to motherhood. That for me is absolutely key. That's the key
Yes.
bit. Me and Alice Soper had a little bit of a Twitter exchange on this yesterday. Alice Soper is amazing. Women's rugby powerhouse in New Zealand and a mate of mine. And we were kind of thinking the same thing here. It's so important that there are updated maternity policies that the RFU now have in place, but that it is recognised that the journey to return must be individualised. It must
Yeah.
be unique to that player. And alongside that, it must be player led. The player
Yes.
absolutely makes the calls on when they return, if they return, and what that return looks like for them. So, as much as Abby Ward gets celebrated for her return to rugby, we must also equally celebrate this decision from Vicky Cornborough because both players are doing what feels right for them. And I think that, you know, yes, absolutely. Shout about Abby Ward. Massive, amazing thing that she's done. This is also a massive, amazing thing that Vicky has done because she's made the decision that is right for her. And I, you know, and that's so important. And that's it. It's just a very short news article, but for me, it's so important that when we are designing or putting things in place that are for women, so maternity policies, that they're still, that it's not just a rush to get this through and it's a blank, you know, it's a template that everyone must follow regardless. It still must be something that is individualized for the player, and has the player at its heart.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just obviously quickly, like a tip of a sipper to Vicky Cornborough for all she's done in rugby. You know, two World Cup finals, 70 plus Red Roses caps. She's been awesome. She's been nothing short of awesome for England in her career. To do that and have a pretty decent career in the tech industry is firstly cool, and then secondly, a massive achievement. So, yeah, couldn't agree with everything you couldn't agree more with everything you've said there, Jess. But yeah, I think also we've got to acknowledge the quality and the shift that Vicky Cornborough has put in for an England Rose shirt.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking about sort of the current crop of internationals moving kind of swiftly, but not really onto our fantasy league because I am still in 19th place, which, I'm not having the greatest couple of weekends, but I feel our league's quite, like the men's prem, you can leap a couple of places by gaining a point or two here or there. So I had Ellie Kildon as my captain because it felt like a mistake to not have her on first week. So I nationally, I did some sort of reactionary choice and made her as captain for last weekend for round two. I had Abby Dow. She scored me 33 points. Same as Meg Jones, who also scored me 33 points. And actually, some of Abby Dow's points came from a try. Meg Jones didn't score, so she got all of her points from other stats as well. So she carried 129 meters, she made 10 tackles, she beat six defenders, she had one assist, which is pretty amazing. Who else did I have on there? Obviously, I had Ellis Martin. Obviously, I had Leah Bartlett. I had Miley Packer, and Rachel Malcolm also did really well. She scored me 19 points. So thanks. Thanks, Rachel.
Yes, yeah. I think it said you were 16th, Jess. Actually, I'm just on the so
Oh, am
you were slightly harsh on yourself. Yeah. So you're Jess's dream team, correct?
I? Yeah. Am I doing better than I thought?
You're in 16th, but you're not
That's
too bad.
okay. That's okay. That's all right. I'll take that.
I moved down 3 places to 22. So, the Johannic Saints are struggling, but no doubt a bit of divine will from Saint Joan will improve.
You're not as bad as my dad, who is just below. I just pulled up the rankings. Jess Dad, that's him, inventive name. He's in 23rd. Although he's climbed plus four last round, so he's all right. But that he's not doing very well. I don't know where my dad's going wrong. Do better, Dad.
So,
Better.
what happened for me was that obviously Wales released their team really early in the week, and obviously Jazz Joyce was named in the team, and then they changed it on Friday, and I didn't have a chance to change it. So that's where things went wrong for me. But I'm across the board, I was pretty happy. Like I captained Meg Jones, which was a really good decision. I had Rigioni for Italy at inside
Me
centre. That
too,
was a good.
yes. Yeah, she got me 25 points.
Yeah, and I also had Monaghan in my second row, which got me 36 points. So that was really good.
Sorry, I've dropped some.
Yeah. So and then I also had Ellis Martin. Also had Rachel Malcolm. I went for the French scrum half, but that didn't do me too.
No, she was amazing in the first round for me.
I know
Amazing. She scored me
Bordeaux
33
Saint Zeus only got.
points.
Only got me 12 points.
Yeah, I know. What I would like to say though, as I it's now I've I did it last week and I said, come on, Ellis Martin, score me more points, and she scored a try. So I shall say it this week and I shall say it again ready for round three of the Six Nations. When that's coming around, I say, come on, Ellis Martin again. Get me more points, and then it'll be a hat trick next time. And
Yeah.
that'll be amazing for obviously mostly for Ellis Martin, but also for me and where I am in the fantasy league.
And hopefully, Fran McGee will be fit, so we can so I can have her in the out in you know at, on the wing, which will be really really good. So, yeah. So just quickly, just to give you sort of a run of that, we've given our rankings, but there has been a change at the top. Heather Winterton is now top on 887 points. And GA Rugby has gone down 1 place to second. They're on 863 points. And then Cat moved up one to third on 831 points. So, that top five are all in sort of the 800 Mark, and yeah, obviously we've got the Fallow Week this week, but next week keep an eye out for that, for those team selections. Hopefully Fran McGhee is playing. Keep up the work on the fantasy team. Like I said, it's a Fallow weekend this weekend, so but we'll be back next weekend with round three of the Women's Six Nations already. So yeah, and obviously without further ado, there is a prize to be playing for. We are absolutely thrilled to announce Charnwood Vintners as the proud sponsor of our Six Nations Fantasy League. They'll be offering a magnum of wine, that's two bottles in one, for the winner. Charnwood Vintners, Leicestershire's local wine merchant, brings an exquisite selection of wines from around the globe. Explore their exceptional range and discover the perfect bottle for any occasion by visiting charnwoodvintners.com.
So, moving on, last week we spoke about that USA versus South Africa game that was going to be played at Ealing Trailfinders Ground. I almost said that right first time. The final score was USA 38, South Africa 17. We had three Tigers players on there, but I want to particularly shout out Tess Fury, who was vice captain. Amazing. So, vice captain of your team when they quite convincingly beat South Africa, I think is really brill. We're going to post up a YouTube link as well because we think it's the link to the entire game. So if anybody wants to watch that and has got some free time, we think it's the entire game that I sort of randomly found from the South Africa Rugby YouTube channel. Just sort of popped up when I was Googling it. The next USA game to keep your eye out for is on the 28th of April in the Pacific Four Series against Canada. Jacob, what were your sort of takeaways, thoughts? Obviously, there is the rumor mill stirring that we spoke about a player that potentially we might be signing, maybe, do you want to speak a little bit more about that?
So Emily Henrich, who is usually a centre, was playing on the right wing. She scored a try. So it was a really good kick through from the fly half, and Henrich just had the composure just to dot down, really calm, composed finish. The full game is available on the official Springbok YouTube, so do check that out. It was an interesting fixture. This was the first fixture under the tenure of USA's new head coach. They've had a new head coach, and this was the first time that USA women and South Africa women have played each other in 11 years. So that was just an interesting sort of factoid that I found out as well. And then we had some insight from listener to the pod, Jonathan Pugh, who messaged in saying that he happened to be staying in the same hotel that weekend as, I think it was, the South Africa women, ahead of their game in Ealing, and he said that Katha Jacobs wasn't playing because of a collarbone injury, which is a shame. So that's why it was just our US internationals. Katha Jacobs was unfortunately injured. KMA Sangopolisinele was starting at tight head. Obviously, she's been playing a lot of blindside flanker for Tigers this season, but by all accounts, she put in a really solid shift against the Springboks women. I think USA, a lot of that performance was built on set piece dominance, which is quite pleasing ahead of Pacific Four. As we said, Tess Fury at fullback was vice captain, and then Talia Brodie, the leader of our rebellion, came off the bench at number 20, because unfortunately she's behind Kate Zachary, who is, I think, was captaining the US. He's been really awesome for Ealing this season. So I'm just taking our Tigers glasses off for a second. I'm sure that was a really cool moment to play for your country at your club for Kate Zachary. So that was really, really good to see as well. But just an interesting game to keep eyes on in this Six Nations window. As Jess says, the next USA game is that opening of the Pacific Four series on the 28th of April. So, well, I'm assuming the players will stay with the USA. I don't think we'll get players back for that Alliance Cup fixture against Harlequins a week on Saturday, but that is a nice segue into our discussions. Again, we talked about it last week, but we're going to start the build-up again for the return to Matty Earlywood's Welford Road by Leicester Tigers women in what seems ages since that ill-fated Ealing game. The women are back. A Leicester Tigers team is back at Matty Earlywood's Welford Road for what seems ages. Week on Saturday the 13th of April, and yeah, let's get into it.
Yeah, so let's remind ourselves what it is. So the Allianz Cup is sponsored by the company Allianz. There, it all kicked off in 2021 for the first time, featuring the same 10 teams that play in the PWR. The teams are placed in two pools based on their final standings in the previous PWR season. So obviously we didn't have those, and neither did Ealing. Each team will play two home and two away games against the other teams within their pool. The top two teams within their pools then progress onto the semi-finals and then final, where the successful teams obviously become champions. As it says here on the Allianz website, the cup will allow more squad players within the PWR teams to get some game time, as there are no pauses for international breaks or competitions. So much like the Prem Cup, the Allianz Cup pretty much operates in the same kind of ethos
Yeah.
and position in our league as it does within the Gallagher Men's Prem. We were, just to remind ourselves, in Pool A alongside Exeter Chiefs, Warriors Women, who sadly only played one fixture, Sale Sharks, and Bristol Bears. The other pool, just to remind you of who's in our league, if you don't know by now, where have you been? Saris, Harlequins, Gloucester Hartbury, Loughborough Lightning, and Trailfinders. And this game, if I can quickly pull up my notes, is a seventh place playoff against Quins. So they're
Yes.
the team in the other league. It's a seventh place playoff pool, and it kicks off at 12:30 on Saturday, the 13th of April. So it's not this week that we're talking about. We're trying to give everyone a bit of a reminder that the women's fixtures are still ongoing. There's the Allianz Cup stuff still to come, because it's an opportunity for us to fill the Tradeview stand at least at Matty Earlywood's Welford Road and get a good crowd in what is quite some big gaps between the last women's fixture and the last men's fixture at home. Here's the opportunity. And also, it's been a while since we've had the Allianz Cup. It's really important to remind ourselves about what it is and what its purpose is. And I think for us, as a team that has its first season in the PWR, looking to help players bridge the gap between Champ and PWR, I think the Allianz Cup serves as a really important stepping stone, so that the
Yes.
gap feels less massive. For players that, when we heard about it in the interview last week with Tom Hudson, for players that maybe haven't got the most PWR game time, this is an opportunity for them to gain vital game time and experience.
I really like that the I like that yes, it's similar to the Prem Rugby Cup in the men's, but I like that the pool sort of allocation is based on previous league standings. That
Yeah.
makes it feel a little bit less random.
Yes.
And I it kind of it having that kind of builds it more as a development league as well, because I know Exeter sort of won, I think they won the first two Alliance Cups.
Yeah, so it says here on the website as well, they beat Exeter. No, they didn't. They wouldn't beat themselves. Exeter Chiefs beat Harlequins 57-12 to win the inaugural Allianz Cup. And then they also won it in 2013 as well, when no, they didn't. When they got to the final again, this is me, you can tell I've only had one cup of coffee during recording this part. They got to the final again in 2023, but they were beaten by Saracens at Sandy Park, 29 points to 19. So I think there, as you say, you can almost chart the growth of Exeter coming into the league and then using the Allianz Cup to to springboard themselves into the PWR. And I think that's a potential cool template for us. And I know it's, I think it's something Jess Hayden spoke about when we interviewed her a couple of weeks ago. She said, look at where Exeter were, look at where they are. And that's a potential kind of hope, shining beacon for Tigers.
Yeah, for next season, absolutely. I mean, it's what the Chiefs men's team did like 10, 15 years ago. They went all out at what was then the Anglo-Welsh Cup. And then that was the springboard for their later success. And yeah, absolutely, I think we can do the same, especially for the Alliance Cup next season. And I think, yeah, I mean, we spoke about it last week. It's an opportunity to see some of those fringe players, to give those players game time, players who had been on sort of the bench, only got like 10 minutes in some PWR games. And it's an opportunity to kind of showcase the work that we've put on in this off period since our last fixture. So yeah, I think it's which was that unfortunate home defeat against Ealing. So yeah, it's going to be a great opportunity. I think also what we could I think what we also should maybe be touting, you know, Harlequins haven't had the best of seasons. They won't have their England players, won't have Ellie Kildon. They might not have their South African players. You know, are we looking at the potential for our first top flight win at Matthew Wood's Welford Road? I think we very well could be. So that's something to get excited about as well. And yeah, as we spoke last week, under 18s go free as well. So it's a great family day out. So if you haven't got your ticket, please do so. We do have to emphasize that this fixture is not included in the women's season ticket. So if you are a women's season ticket holder, you will have to pay for the ticket unless, of course, you're under 18. But yeah, I think it's a great chance to obviously have a game in this off period to give that platform to the girls, sort of who are sort of on the on the fringes of our squad. And yeah, obviously, like I said, it might be a great opportunity to get our first top flight victory at Mattley Woods Welford Road, which is very, very exciting. But yeah, you did a much better job of explaining the pool format than I did last week. It is a tad complicated. We'll give as
Well,
that.
apart from fluffing over who actually won at one point, because I'm only on one cup of coffee, I needed about 17 to survive and have my brain function at its peak. But yeah, I just before obviously we're going to now go into our interview with Paul Morgan, but I just wanted to take a moment, kind of building on chatting about the cup and the PWR to go. And I know you spoke about it in a tweet that you posted. Like, how awesome is it in our first season that we've got an interview with somebody who is helping with the running of the league, and how open Paul is. So for the people that aren't aware, we get weekly stats sent, information sent to us about the PWR, about who's playing who. We get the press releases, the stats, we get included in all of that. There's a willingness to share, I think, in this league, and there's a willingness to help content creators wherever they're publishing their content, being it in standard journalistic form or pods or by other means, there's a willingness to help. So like, yeah, it's kind of pinch me moment, but also I think a recognition that this league is, I get the sense that it's a bit more open, or there's a wantingness to be open than other perhaps sporting competitions are. So kind of how awesome is it that we get Paul Morgan, who was at Gallagher Men's Prem but has now moved over to PWR. And I know we spoke about we you know we speak about that with him, but he also chats about like the workings behind the league, visions for the league, a little bit of insight into like broadcasty stuff. There's a wealth of information that's going to come your way in the interview, but I think it's I was really pleased at the openness the league has, not just in getting the interview, but also the sharing of the stuff that they give us.
It was. I mean, we've been in our first season as the LTW Fancast. We've been blessed to have done a lot of awesome interviews, both within the club. You know, the Jess Hayden interview was a pinch me moment as well. But yeah, this was a fantastic interview with Paul. Really, really insightful. You know, and we're really pleased to have that working relationship with PWR at the moment. Obviously, that doesn't mean we're not gonna continue challenging for better stuff, for on stuff like highlights, player access, you know, streaming of games as well. But yeah, this interview was really fantastic. Paul was really great to speak to, and yeah, we're so eager to broadcast this interview for you listeners. So I think without a further ado, let's go over to our interview with Paul Morgan, of the Premiership Women's Rugby.
Welcome, Paul. I guess I just wanted to start by, obviously, this is the first season that it's been officially PWR. There's a bit of a rebrand. So what kind of goals did you have at the start of the season for promoting the PWR, and how kind of satisfied are you sort of over the halfway point of the season that the goals have been achieved?
Yeah, look, our objective is to grow this league, isn't it? And to grow women's rugby as well. So, and women's sport in its widest sense. So we're always looking at sort of a tune in or turn up kind of feeling. So we want more fans to be turning up in the stadiums, and we want more people to be tuning in to watch them on TV. So I suppose if we take that back to the start, it was really crucial for us that we got a TV deal, and getting TNT to be showing a game every weekend was very, very important with us. And you'll see we've managed to do some other games on YouTube, but having that regular TV appointment has been really important for us. And in terms of the second part, which is turning up, which is really, again, crucial, we've seen, you know, a number of clubs break some records this season. We've seen, I think, Saracens certainly have their biggest crowd. Obviously, Sale did when they went to the AJ Bell. But to see and Harlequins, you know, breaking that world record at Christmas. So I guess from those two perspectives, you're never satisfied with what you've got. You know, everyone within the PWR team, and I know that you are the same, are really passionate about women's sport and passionate about women's rugby. And therefore, there's never a day where we go, right, we're done now, we're on our way. So we're always going to be striving, we're always going to be fighting hard for that. But I suppose in terms of those two objectives, we've had a lot more people tuning in through the TNT, and then obviously through the game we did on the iPlayer and through our YouTube channel. And we've had a lot more people turning up at stadiums as well. So we would never mark ourselves as a success because we'd never be that sort of big-headed, but we are moving in the right direction is probably the best thing we could say.
Yeah, absolutely. We talk about sort of the tuning in and turning up. The Superpower weekend, I guess, was a massive opportunity for people to do
Yeah.
so. What are your reflections after that weekend?
Yeah, look, the calendar as I mean, I'm not sure I could certainly when I follow all the forums and Facebook groups of the men's teams, it certainly all fans didn't quite realize the calendar changed as much as it had done this year and will change again next year, certainly in the men's game. So, you know, over the last since the game turned professional, there weren't many gaps in it. And everyone would always say to us, or, you know, you want to arrange this game or that game. And then not many gaps in the calendar, right? And then obviously, from a men's games perspective, the overlaps were the biggest complaint fans gave. So this season was completely different. It was a stroke of genius stepping back a bit, I think. And I'd wrestled with this myself for many years. How do you promote the Women's Six Nations? Moving the Women's Six Nations into its own window was the simplest idea ever, but aren't the best ideas simplest, right? So once the Women's Six Nations moved out, then the Men's Six Nations, then the Gallagher Premiership said they weren't going to play during the Men's Six Nations. It created a window, and we saw it again last weekend, didn't we, in women's football at WSL had their women's football weekend because there were international matches, and there wasn't a Premier League. So that, I suppose, created the opportunity, the fallow weekend in the Six Nations when we had no Gallagher Prem, we had no Women's Six Nations, and obviously no Men's Six Nations, created an opportunity for us to have a little bit of a celebration, I suppose. And that's where the Superpower Weekend was born. So again, for me, you know, my job day in, day out is to make as much noise as I can and create as much, you know, as many great headlines as possible about the sport. So Superpower Weekend, from that perspective, was born. And, you know, was again a real success. I think that, you know, was a real success. We saw so much more attention on the league And we will, I suppose, the best, you know, example, we will definitely be doing it again next year. So, yeah, simple idea. They're often the best, aren't they? And I really hope, hope it was enacted well too.
Yeah, which is going to be my follow-up question. Like, please, please, please do it again next year. If you talk about, like, making headlines, I think, for me, we can't speak to you without talking about that Power Differently campaign, which I think we're still talking about. People are highlighting it online. And I think especially when we've seen promo shots of other competitions where it's just, like, people in suits, arms folded, or, you know, elbow on a trophy, you know, the Power Differently campaign looks so different. Like, what are your feelings about that? You must still be
about it. I joined properly in about July and last year, and it was the first sort of project that I was brought in on. And our CEO Belinda Moore, it was her idea, it was her vision. So getting that together was a joy, really. And actually, the women involved were so brilliant, because without their input, it just wouldn't have worked. But yeah, we wanted to put them in an environment they wanted to be put in. I wish more people could have seen it. You know, the studio we brought, it was 10 players at that time, because Ellie Green came as well. You know, we worked with Getty Images on it, and their kind of stylist, she brought in literally hundreds of pieces of clothing on racks upon racks upon racks, and the women were just able to pick whatever they wanted. And so for them to be expressing themselves in their own way, you know, rugby players, that we all love to say this, don't we, all shapes and sizes, which is probably true. But, you know, you can imagine Leah Bartlett wants to represent herself in a completely different way to Amanda Swartz, right? So that gave them the opportunity to be who they wanted to be in those pictures. And then it also gave us the opportunity to do some media with them. And again, we wanted them to be who they wanted to be. So did I ever think we'd still be talking about it 6 or 8 months later? No, definitely not. But it is brilliant that we are. And so, yeah, it was phenomenally, you know, for me, I get, you know, I've been working as a journalist for 25 years before this, and then worked in comms for 10 years. But to see Abby Ward's picture sit on the front page of Telegraph Women's Sport Monthly was, you know, this is not all about me, but it was a massive career high for me, real career high. And also on the day, you know, all the photographers bought kind of like mood boards for each of the players, but the players really decided how they were photographed. And Abby particularly said, look, this shot will show me showing, you know, sort of I'm in a balletic pose and I'm doing what I do on the pitch. So she loved that, and there were countless examples through it. So it was as authentic as it possibly could be, which is so, so important in women's sport. You know, I'm a guy, obviously, so listening to the women, how they wanted to be portrayed, was really important. You can't, you know, I try and promote a community which I'm not a member of, so it's very important I listen to people within that community to tell me what they want to look like, etc. And, you know, I've been listening to a few little podcasts and various things that Jill Burns has been doing lately, the legendary Jill Burns, and she talks really well about some of the things that she was asked to do in her career. And I think one of my favorite, or one of my worst in a sense, whichever way you want to look at it, was when Jill was asked to dress up, and I'm trying to get this right, as the sugar scrum fairy, okay, for a photo shoot for a newspaper, I don't know, 25, 30 years ago. You wouldn't get away with that now, thank goodness. But, you know, Jill, I remember, you know, Jill has said openly she did it and wanted to do it because she knew she'd get rugby in a paper, right? So, and a lot of generations of women athletes have had to go through that. But it's nice where they could just literally, as I say, decide what they wanted to look like, be portrayed the way they wanted to look like, and then we could then open the door to lots of media. And obviously, you know, Abby Ward is a good example. Her story is incredible at that time. You know, I remember looking at it, most people looked at it to sort of say, are you really going to be able to do that? You know, are you really going to be able to give birth and then play so quickly afterwards? Well, she's not, did she give birth? She played. She scored a try in the game, didn't she? Typical of Abby. There's no mountain she can't climb over. So, yeah, so all those things, it was a really, really satisfying piece of work to be involved with. It felt like it landed well. And it felt like it told the athlete story in the way they wanted it to be told, which I think is really, really important.
You've given us a bit of insight there and like the work behind the scenes on the day. Obviously, there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes to operate the league. Can you kind of shed a bit of light on that and give us a bit of a sneak insight?
Well, I mean, centrally, we're based in Victoria, in London. We are a small team. There's only six or seven of us, and a few of those people are work on a sort of freelance basis as well. Belinda's obviously the CEO, and she is everything drives through her. But I suppose some of the jobs you'd expect in any other walk of life: communications, marketing, commercial, business development. Business managers. They all still exist within a sports organization as well. But yeah, you compare us to a Premiership Rugby or a URC or a Six Nations. We are very, very much smaller. But then that reflects the way that the where the sport is at the moment as well. You wouldn't expect us to be, in a you wouldn't expect there to be 100 people at top of the gherkin kind of thing. We're in a, we're in a small office, and that's where the sport is. And also, when you're doing a job where you're working for clubs, working for online clubs, and those clubs are trying themselves to be financially sustainable as we are, things will always be humble. But yeah, I think what you get is a real passion amongst people that work in those work in sport, which I've found over the years, which is great. And people just do put in more time, and they do things in the evening, and they do things on the weekend because they want to. And a very wise man at my old job once said to me that we work when they play, and I think that's a good way as well. We do, well, obviously weekends is fine. That's kind of part and parcel of it. And we're trying to do our best for those nine clubs. That's ultimately it. If the nine clubs are prospering, then we're prospering, whether that's commercially on TV or whatever it is. So yeah, it's a small, passionate team, driven and certainly led superbly by Belinda.
Awesome. Hi, Paul. I mean, you're talking earlier just quickly about the TNT and the Superpower Weekend, getting that live streamed on YouTube, getting that Gloucester Hartbury game on iPlayer as well. Obviously, recently confirmed, we've seen in the news that TNT have done a new deal with Gallagher Premiership Rugby.
Yeah.
Could you potentially give us any insight on how that relationship might be next season for PWR? Could we see more games potentially live streamed? Yeah, is there anything you could give
Yeah,
your perspective?
we want more eyeballs on the league, so we're definitely talking about that. From what I can gather, the iPlayer broadcast went down very well, so we're talking to them. We're talking to other international territories as well, because we want to obviously grow the game globally. And we are in America, we are in New Zealand, and in Rugby Pass TV takes us to a lot of other countries as well. So there's certainly a desire to do that. I think, the reality was that the organization was brand new. It only started itself in July, so getting that TNT deal across the line took almost all that time. But would we want to see? And we will. The Allianz Cup finals coming up soon, and we'll definitely be broadcasting that on YouTube. Will we see more games going in a free to air space? Well, if you know what I mean, definitely. And is there ambition to do that? Yeah, definitely too. But I think. But the thing with TNT as well, obviously, they bring a rugby audience with them, and they've been brilliant to be able to do games like, I think in the final round, it's the same day as the Champions Cup final, Investec Champions Cup final, and our game will go on before that. So that huge rugby audience that will watch that European Cup final, we will get a bit of it towards the end of our game. So I think, TNT have been brilliant partners, and they really do buy into what we're trying to do. But will the landscape evolve over the next years? Definitely. But as I say, I've been, I see them every day, and the talent they've put with it as well. For us to see someone like Sarah Elgan, who's one of the foremost broadcasters in the country, especially if you're Welsh, you see her all the time on S4C and other places. But to have Sarah presenting the show, to have really great people, as producers and directors, is really, really important. Probably stuff that people don't see as much as they should from a TV perspective. But TNT have really bought into it from a philosophical perspective. And obviously, when we went to Superpower Weekend, they showed a second game as well, which wasn't necessarily in the plans at the start of the season. And I think they'll make a really special day of the semi-finals, and then 2 weeks later of the final of season two.
That's awesome. Awesome. Thank you. I mean, yeah, so you've worked on Premiership Rugby in the Gallagher Premiership beforehand, and now for PWR. So what have you learned from that and enjoyed so far from that experience?
Oh, look, it's such a privilege, isn't it? You know, you must feel the same when you're doing the pod and other things. It's such a privilege to work in rugby. It's obviously, you know, not every day's smelling the roses, but it's such a satisfying sports working, notwithstanding over the last sort of 2 years within Premiership, we've had some, I mean, could describe as anything less than horrendous days with clubs going out of business. But the devastation that brought to certainly to fans, staff, and players, it cannot be underestimated. But working within rugby is on the whole pretty satisfying. Working within women's sports satisfying. You know, when I was at Rugby World, 20 odd years ago, when I was there, we had the first woman on the cover of the magazine. We had Paula George on there ahead of the 2002 World Cup in Barcelona. So I've always had quite a passion for women's sport. The characters within it, and you only go look at Marley Packer this weekend, they're just good-hearted people. There's a lot of really good-hearted people in women's sport. A lot of people who are there because they really want to be. You know, that's the thing. You look around that England team, you look at Ellie Kildan, you look at Abby Dow, they want to play rugby. They really want to be there. And that is really important. So I think that it's a very satisfying place to work, notwithstanding, you know, the challenges of professional sport. So yeah, it certainly gets me up out of bed in the morning.
Yeah, you absolutely hit the nail on the head there. I mean, when Tigers beat Sale this season, the PWR, like that was such a like obviously that was a huge moment for the team, but just for me and Jess as well. Like that was awesome to like be talking about that and stuff. But I mean, obviously
Yeah,
that.
and I must have, you know, I must admit, I listened to the pod, and I did feel for you a bit as the season was going on, because I also, you know, I that team that England team that played probably from about 98 to maybe 2010, I got to know a lot of those women really well. So Vicky McQueen, obviously, or Vicky Masarella, as she was in those days, was someone I knew really well, and to see her going game from game and not getting what they deserved was pretty heartbreaking at times. So, you know, for me, it's been a real season of firsts, and absolutely, I'm so pleased for Vicky to when that first win came across the line, because that club has deserved it. And it's just, you always have a bit of strange feeling when you work centrally, because every time someone wins, someone loses as well. So you want to be kind of, you don't want to be too happy for the winners and too down for the losers. But I know from your perspective, and you know, having worked as a journalist a long time, you do need some wins to sort of feed off, don't you? And it just catapults you through for the next few weeks, because you've got that win, and it'll be the same for the club as well. So yeah, it was certainly a very, I was really pleased to see that.
Yeah, it was definitely one of our stand-up moments from the season. But what about you? What has your been sort of standout moment of the PWR or even the Alliance
Yeah.
of Spa?
Yeah, look, it's been a season of firsts, hasn't it, for us? We talked there about Tigers' first win, but I was, you know, just as pleased to see Sale's first win, Trailfinders' first win, Trailfinders' impact. I mean, look, we shouldn't. If you look, took a step back and knew that someone of Giselle Mather's ability was involved, you knew something was going to come good from that club. So it's not really surprising. But I'm really pleased that we've, because when you look back at Premier 15s before, there've been a couple of seasons when a couple of clubs, for various different reasons, have sort of been cut off and not even, you know, not necessarily that competitive. Whereas this season, people have been competitive. I mean, ahead of this, I did have a quick look back at some of Tigers' results, and you know, I thought it was remarkable in a way that they're almost at 20 points a game. And I think if you said one of the newest teams coming to league was going to score 20 points a game, that would be pretty impressive. So I think all those teams, which we'd say are probably in the bottom three now, you could see a point at which, you know, maybe not next season, maybe the season after, they can start to really move up that table and can be real challengers to the league. And they've shown enough. And you know, just having t look, Tigers are, if not the biggest club in Europe, certainly one of the biggest. So to have them in PWR, to have that brand in there, to us to be able to go to Matlew's Welford Road on a regular basis, all these things are just great things for the league. So yeah, it's been a season of firsts, and I mentioned earlier to Jess about some of the record crowds we've seen. You know, having, you know, really good uptake of season tickets from Tigers, which was probably about 12 months ago now. Those are really important staging points and things that really make me smile when I see them. So yeah, it's been again a season of real firsts, and hopefully there's more to come.
Yeah, absolutely, and just finally, I mean, obviously we talked about that Sale win. Obviously, the massive achievement that Vicky McQueen has done, and all the coaches and the club have done this season. But I guess could you give us a brief summary as to your thoughts on Tigers this far this season, and do you think there's anything more that they could achieve potentially?
Well, look, I think it's really, really hard starting a new team off, isn't it? That's what I'd say. I'd preface anything to say that. There are not many examples of someone who has started a brand new team and brought them into an elite league like this. So, look, if you to any rugby fan, if you say the words Meg Jones, you're going to be smiling, aren't you? So, Meg's performances, her personality, the way she's attacked the league, and in a team that wasn't winning every game, it doesn't seem to worry her. So it's she certainly for me has been one of the absolute high points of the season, not just Tigers. I mentioned earlier, they're up close to 20 points a game, which I think is really good. They've got some try, I think it's four try bonus points as well, which shows they're playing in the right way. And I think any team with Meg in it is going to play that way. You see a lot of teams maybe at the wrong end of tables in all sorts of sports, rugby as well, who can go a little bit inside themselves. But Tigers haven't done that. They've done and I think for me to see them push Gloucester Harbury close. I mean, there was nothing in it against Saracens with sort of 20 minutes to go, and obviously the big guns came off the bench from Saris, which always, I think any team in the world would find it difficult to cope with them. So I think Tigers' report card has got massive A plus on it for me. So many things to be happy about, and again, getting to see the players a little bit better. So someone like a Leah Bartlett, who again I think has been quietly a real star this season. Then seeing her play for Scotland on Saturday, wow, amazing. So there's loads of great things to be really happy about from a Tigers perspective, and they're only going to get better as well. That's the thing. This is year one of a really long journey, and the vision and the strategy for PWR when it was set up by the RFU and others is a 10-year strategy. It's a 10-year growth plan. I mean, God, I can't even imagine where the Tigers will be at the end of that. It could be, we could be anywhere. They could be winning the World Cup at that point. I don't know if that even existed. So yeah, look, a great season for them. I think they should be really proud, and a few, and we're not over yet. So we've got a few games to go and a few opportunities to chalk up another win.
So that is about it from us this week. I know there's like a down week because there's no Six Nations, there's no PDBY or Allianz Cup stuff, but this feels, I don't want to say bumper, but I can feel my brain going that way. But I feel we've spoken about a lot. We've chatted about the Six Nations roundup, Ellis Martin scoring tries. We've done some stats. We've done attendances. We've spoken about attendances. I'm going to go and finish listening to that Sports Agents podcast and get some more information about that. We spoke about postpartum return to rugby, Fantasy League, USA rugby playing South Africa. Continuing chatting about maybe signing rumor mills about potential future Tigers or not, but still exciting to see players lighting it up in international rugby, which is really, really cool. Away from the Six Nations, there are lots of other teams playing international rugby right now, so to see players lighting it up is great, and to see other Tigers lighting up international fixtures is great. The Allianz Cup, get your tickets. Let's see you at the 13th of April at Matty Lewis Welford Road. I feel we've spoken about a lot this week, despite there actually being no fixtures this weekend, apart from that Leinster fixture. We may or may not be gloomy when we come to record next week. Who knows? who knows? I went in with the positive on the Rolling Mall and said, like Tigers by 10, because I feel like somebody had to say that we would win. Because both everybody else was like, Tigers lose, Tigers lose. And then Mike was like, come on, Jess, be positive. And I was like, cool, Tigers by 10.
Yeah, I think just quickly on the Leinster game, like I know the last time we played them, which was at Matty Lewis Welford Road, I kind of thought that was the opportunity to beat them, and we were all over them for 30 minutes, and we were shafted a little bit for Leinster to score some of their points. But yeah, we've got that game at 8 o'clock on Saturday to look forward to from a Tigers perspective. But yeah, no, it's been another wonderful episode. If you're listening, Paul, thank you so much again for allowing us to interview you. That was awesome. Yeah, we've talked about a lot of stuff. We've done, like, I know on the Rolling Mall, like, Mike has Tiger Watch. I feel like this was like Tiger Watch Plus. This was there you go. I did the voice.
Sorry, I am slightly pissing myself in the background here, because that was very funny. But yeah, no, it is bumper. Every week we say it's a bumper episode. This week is definitely bumper because, as we've chatted about, a load of stuff. So yeah, we're gonna let you go and continue to enjoy your week, and keep sending us stuff, keep engaging with us. We might post about the Leinster game as a contested prediction this weekend. Maybe we tend to stick within the realms of women's rugby for our contested predictions, but I see no reason why we can't delve into men's rugby this weekend, because there's no women's rugby on our screens.
Well, when we're not talking about women's rugby, we are the Dan Cole.
This is true.
Club, so,
I know what the prediction is, that Dan Cole's going to score a try.
Oh, don't. I make that prediction every game. That's
the prediction. That's the prediction. Or that he, like, does some scrum skullduggery, but I feel like that's going to be tricky for Jess Hayden and the team to spot. But I'm going to think of something, and we'll post it about the Leinster game. So yeah, follow us on Contested, post your own predictions, engage with us on Twitter, drop us an email. Our Twitter handle is, I don't know off the top of my head, I'm quickly scanning, is at LTW Fancast. And I'm also panicking because I seem to have forgotten our email address. So Jacob, I'm handing over to you to smoothly remember it and say it.
ltwfancast@gmail.com. Please do.
Why can't I remember that? I desperately need to go and get more coffee. I can feel my brain fading away as we speak, and I've still got to write a few articles and do a few rugby stuff today. So I'm in desperate need of more caffeine. So
yeah, I'm heading straight to the library to do some disc work. So yes. I also need it. I don't drink coffee. I'm a tea drinker, but I'll need another cup of tea, and then I'll head off to the library to do some disc work. But yeah, absolutely. Thank you again to the listeners. Thank you again to those on the Fantasy League. Yes, join us on Contested. Give us a rating on Spotify. Give us a review on Apple Music. Please do email or continue tweeting with us. And yeah, we'll be back next week to properly preview for the third time.
Properly. Nice. Yeah. Nice pun. Properly. See.
Yeah. For that Alliance Cup home fixture against Harlequins on Saturday the 13th of April. But have a great rest of your week, guys. Have a lovely weekend. Hopefully the Champions Cup isn't
Leinster, you're going down.
Yeah. No scrumming shenanigans. I want scrums penalised. I want rucks penalised. I want blocking penalised, the lot. So yeah, we'll see how we get on against Leinster on Saturday night. But yeah, take care, everyone, and we'll see you next week.